All right.
Good morning, everybody. Good morning and happy Wednesday, everybody. Today's April 15th, 2026. Oh, hey, it's tax day. And what's going on this morning? Well, the S&P 500 is sitting here hovering around an all-time high, if you can believe it. The market has just absolutely ripped for the last 2 weeks. Even as we're watching these knock-on effects of oil and energy shortages ripple across economies all over Asia. It's kind of hard to imagine both of these stories could coexist in the same time frame. Is there like some invisible liquidity pump going on out there that I'm not aware of? Because I'm watching Bitcoin rip. I'm watching stocks rip as economies all over the world are starting to shut down again. I mean, look at some of these stories that we've got going on across Asia this morning. We've got China's petrochemical producers are idling capacity. Purified terephthalic acid appears to be in short supply. Don't you just hate when that happens, purified terephthalic acid? I hate when I can't get my hands on that. Why do you care about that? Well, that's the primary ingredient for polyethylene and polyester. In other words, plastic, clothes, textiles, the feedstock that goes into them, well, they're stopping production of it because oil is getting so expensive. In Japan, you've got the Japanese government is rolling out $10 billion of support measures to help their Asian neighbors get their hands on the oil that they need. And what you might be saying, why is Japan spending $10 billion to help their neighbors get oil? Well, remember that story we did yesterday during this morning video about how Japanese bathroom fixture makers were having to shut down production because they can't get their hands on feedstock? Well, the Japanese are worried about their own supply chains. And so they're pledging this $10 billion, which I'm sure their central bank is just going to monetize, in order to make sure that their own supply chains are shored up. And even as that is going on, you've got Japanese oil refineries are working at just two-thirds of capacity right now because they're having a hard time getting their hands on the oil they need to run at plate capacity. Now, the Japanese are taking steps to secure other supplies. They're buying a lot of oil from the United States, for example. But the Japanese refineries have the same problem our refineries have. They are built to handle medium sour crude, not the light sweet that comes out of the ground here in the States. So, you know, domestic supplies from the U.S. can help. They can bridge the gap. But without major upgrades to their refinery complexes, it can't replace Middle Eastern oil entirely. Meanwhile, in India, we've got fertilizer prices, in particular for urea, have more than doubled since before the war started. $1,136 a ton for urea in India this morning. That's after it was under $500 a ton before the war began. And now we've got rolling blackouts in Pakistan on top of that. They'll be shutting off power for 2 hours plus pretty much across the country in order to avoid their oil burning peak units from having to come online during those peak hours. Look, fertilizer in India, rolling blackouts in Pakistan, Japanese refiners shutting down capacity, Chinese petrochemicals shutting down capacity. Meanwhile, the S&P 500 is pushing all-time highs. Why? I don't know. Because of data centers? Oh, what's that? This just in. Maine, the legislator, has just approved a moratorium on data centers through October of 2027. That is the first state to do so. Now, mind you, it still requires governor's signature there, but it sailed through both houses of the legislature. And there's similar legislation marching through 11 other states right now pushing for data center moratoriums. People don't want these things built in their backyard. Meanwhile, we've got luxury brands are all reporting a big drop in Q1 sales. Companies like LVMH, Kering, and Hermes all saw their sales take a dive in March after a pretty good start to the year, coinciding with the start of war. You know, all that Middle East oil money in Dubai, it's not out there buying handbags right now because, well, missiles falling on your head is funny like that. Meanwhile, we've also got this trade war thing going on. You guys remember the trade war? It was all the rage about a year ago. Yeah, that's still happening. We've got BRP. They're the maker of Sea-Doo jet skis. They also make snowmobiles. Their stock is getting absolutely crushed this morning, down double digits on a clarification of tariffs involving steel and aluminum. Wait till you see what's going on with that story. Meanwhile, tractor and combine sales are also way down. Now, that one probably being driven largely by the tariff war, the trade war. Remember, American farmers was the The preferred means of retaliation against the United States, with the Chinese cutting way back on their soybean purchases last year, that hurt U.S. farmers. You can see it in the tractor and combine sales numbers. Tractors down 9.1%. Combine sales down 25.3%. Farmers are still struggling out there right now. And these higher energy prices and higher fertilizer prices, that is not going to help, not a little bit. And we're going to end this, the day with a little bit of positive stories. You know, we've talked a lot about these European automakers that are getting clobbered by the combination of tariffs and competition from Chinese EVs. We have an unusually positive story about Stellantis this morning. Their shipments saw a 12.1% jump in the first quarter, a big jump for Stellantis. Remember, they just took tens of billions of dollars in charges related to the overproduction of EVs. Well, it turns out when you lower prices, you make fewer electric vehicles and you put out more hybrids, in other words, give the market what it wants, well, you start selling more cars. It's funny how that works. Guys, we got a lot to talk about this morning. Why don't we shrink my big melon of a head and let's see what's going on in the world of finance. Don't forget that like button and that subscribe button for you new guys so you can come back and have your coffee with the melon heads, because we do this every single day. Right now, the S&P 500 is modestly positive, up by 4 points, 0.07% in the green this morning. But it's not the gain this morning in the futures for the S&P I want to talk about. Look at this long-term chart, or these daily candles of the S&P 500. Does somebody want to tell me what the hell this was all about? Where did this come from? The last 2 weeks, the S&P has gone from a low of 6,300 to almost 7,000 now. On what? President Trump said a thing about maybe ending the war, maybe not. I don't know. And, you know, I can't help but notice, we'll see in the Bitcoin chart, Bitcoin has had a really good couple of days too. Where is all of this cash coming from? Where is this liquidity pump coming from that has, it's threatening to take stocks to all-time highs here? And you'll go see in all these other stories that we're going to be talking about. I mean, the economy is anything but humming right now. You've got disruptions everywhere, but asset prices continue to pump. Looking at the Dow, it's up 85 points, 0.18% in the green this morning. And the NASDAQ is the only index in the red, down 6 points, 0.02%, essentially unchanged for the morning. We've got the U.S. dollar is a little bit stronger at 98.19, up 9 basis points after falling for a couple of days here. The dollar is pretty much trading inversely with this conflict in Iran. The worse the conflict gets, the higher the dollar goes. If there are prospects for peace, we're seeing the dollar fall. Most oil trade happens in dollars. And so if the conflict gets worse, oil prices go up, people need more dollars. You see the Dixie rally. So we're seeing that, not a lot of change happening right now, at least for this moment in the dollar. Looking over at the bond market, we've got yields are a little bit positive, but just barely. 30-year yield, 4.878. That's up almost 1 basis point. The 10-year yield is at 4.262, up 1 basis point. And the 2-year yield is at 3.761%, up also 1 basis point. And the 1 month is little changed, up a fraction of a point at 3.680. Not a lot happening in bonds. Bitcoin, on the other hand, is holding this 74,000 level. That's kind of important. Why 74,000? That's that low that we saw back after the, what was that? That was the tariff panic low that we saw, that roughly 74.4 level. We've now hit that level twice recently. Support becomes resistance. It looks like right now that 74 is your resistance level. Are we going to break above that or are we going to break down? I don't know. Also before that, that was also your post ETF high as well. So that's one of those levels I've been watching in crypto winter. But, you know, again, like with the S&P chart, where has all this liquidity in crypto come from over these last few weeks here that took us from 65,000 up to almost 75,000? Where's this money coming from? I haven't seen any great news in cryptos, quite the opposite. I mean, that story from earlier this week about World Liberty Financial makes me want to sell everything crypto related. Good God, that was sleazy. And yet people are buying Bitcoin. Okay, good luck with that one. Meanwhile, looking at the commodities board, we've got metals are a little bit lower this morning. Spot gold is at 48.11, down about 30 bucks. June COMEX gold futures are at 48.33, lower by $16, about a third of 1%. Spot silver is at 78.60, down about a dollar after pushing almost to 80 bucks. Actually, we were over 80 bucks overnight. We hit a high of $81, but currently down about 1.2%. May silver futures are at 78.69, lower by about 84 cents or about 1% lower, but I still like the shiny. Copper is pretty much unchanged here, up 0.05%. Platinum higher by 0.8%. Palladium also higher by 0.8%. And WTI crude is higher by 0.66, 91.88 for oil this morning after hitting an overnight high of 73.27. Let's take a look at that oil chart, shall we? Again, oil has been falling for a couple of days here. Currently at $92-ish, $93. We hit a low overnight of about $87. Still a lot of optimism out there. You know, there is talks about maybe a second round of peace talks between the U.S. and Iran. In the meantime, the U.S. appears to be enforcing the blockade of the Strait of Hormuz. A couple of Iranian tankers transited the strait only to be turned around and head back the way they came. We saw that yesterday. But in the meantime, look, guys, the knock-on effects of this ongoing conflict, they are very real. Take this one in Bloomberg. China's petrochemical producers idle capacity as margins crumble. China's petrochemical producers, which supply textile and plastics factories, have cut operations to their lowest seasonal level in 3 years as rising feedstock costs and soft export demand squeeze margins. Several major makers of purified terephthalic acid, including one of the largest, Hengli Petrochemical, have taken some units offline for maintenance, removing about 20% of national capacity, according to a local industrial news outlet, WeLink. The industry's operating rate has dropped as low as 68%. PTA, or purified terephthalic acid, futures have risen less than a quarter in the period to their highest since late 2022. That's back when oil prices were spiking following the invasion of Ukraine by the Russians. Well, we're back to their highest since that level, squeezing margins for petrochemical producers. So we've got petrochemical producers in China are slowing output. Meanwhile, Japan offers $10 billion of support to help their Asian neighbors secure oil. How generous of them? Well, no, it's actually about securing their own supply chains. Japan said Wednesday it would establish a financial framework worth about $10 billion to help Asian countries procure energy resources and bolster their stockpiles as Middle East tensions drive prices higher and disrupt supply chains. The support aimed at preventing knock-on effects on Japan's own supply chains would be channeled mainly through state-backed financial institutions such as Japan's Bank for International Cooperation and the Nippon Export and Investment Insurance. These are credit arrangements, by the way. They're making loans here. Japan is trying to shore up the resources for their supply chains, trying to make sure we don't get more stories like that one yesterday about the bathroom fixture maker that was shutting down or not taking any more orders because they couldn't get feedstock. Meanwhile, we've got another one in Japan. Their refiners are running at two-thirds capacity, awaiting crude from outside the Gulf. Japan's refineries ran at two-thirds of their capacity last week, little change from the previous week, highlighting the short-term challenges of replacing their Middle Eastern crude supply by the Iran cut by the Iran war. Refinery runs stood at 67.8% of the design capacity for the week of April 11th. That's in line with 67.7% in the previous week and well below levels of more than 80% seen before the start of the war in late February. That's according to the Petroleum Association of Japan data on Wednesday. The outlook for next month may be better as the country has released oil from its national stockpile and managed to secure substitutes for over half the volume it imported last May via the Strait of Hormuz, officials have said. A lot of that oil is coming from the U.S. We talked about all the tankers heading for the U.S. Gulf Coast right now. Overall, Middle Eastern crude normally makes up 95% of Japan's imports. However, Japanese refineries have limitations on the volume of other crudes they can run. As their plants are designed to process mainly medium sour Middle Eastern crude, Japan could likely push non-Middle East crude to around 30 to 50% of its slate in the short term, but fully replacing Middle Eastern supply is difficult. That's according to Nitin Prakash, an analyst at Rystad Energy. The U.S. refineries have that same issue. They were built to process Middle Eastern crude, the medium sour, not that light sweet that comes out of the ground here. So Japan's suffering from the same issue our refiners have. Meanwhile, India is seeing knock-on effects. India gets fertilizer offers near $1,000 as war stokes costs. More bad news for farmers. A closely watched urea tender in India, the world's top buyer of the nitrogen-based fertilizer, drew offers near $1,000 a ton in a fresh sign of how the war in Iran is sending prices for the crop nutrients surging. Aramco Trading and Amaropa Asia were among more than two dozen suppliers offering the crop nutrient to the South Asian nation as high prices following the conflict add urgency to stockpiling ahead of a key planting season. Indian Potash, which imports the crop nutrient for the government, received offers for 3.29 million tons against 1.5 million ton tenders for the West Coast, with prices between $935 and $1,136 a ton, according to people familiar with the matter. Urea prices from the Middle East, typically a major global supplier to India, were trading at $490 a ton before the war began, green market data shows. The latest offers are about double the pre-conflict spot levels. So fertilizer in India more than double its pre-war levels. Now we've got rolling blackouts in Pakistan also. Pakistan announces power cuts in bid to control energy prices. Pakistan will suspend electricity supply for 2 hours during peak usage times every evening, the government said, in an effort to manage energy prices affected by the Iran war. Power will be suspended in most of the country for 2.25 hours between 5 p.m. and 1 a.m. each day, according to a statement released by the Energy Ministry. Demand peaks at these times, with expensive furnace oil-fired plants needed to bridge the gap left by reduced hydroelectric generation. Put a pin in that hydroelectric. The blackouts will occur on a rolling basis rather than at the same time across the country, with the country's largest city, Karachi, home to more than 20 million exempt from the cuts. So if you're in Karachi, good news for you. You won't get the power cut. Everybody else, sorry, your power's going out. Also, I couldn't help but notice they're talking about trying to avoid having to fire up those oil-burning peak units, or peakers, they call them. You know, the units that only come online when power prices are at their highest. And they're talking about they need to use them more because of reduced hydroelectric generation. Well, keep in mind, guys, the hydroelectric generation, there's a lot of conflict between India and Pakistan. India is talking about building a lot of new hydroelectric plants in the Himalayas. And, well, Pakistan is downriver of that. And if the Indians are going to be damming up the river, that means less water flowing into Pakistan. Oops, Pakistan has hydroelectric generation. So we could see this spill over into more geopolitical tensions between Pakistan and India, who just had a very brief air war about a year ago. So keep your eye on that story as well. A lot of these knock-on effects from the oil shortages rippling across Asia, and stocks here in the States just couldn't seem to care less. Meanwhile, luxury giants slump as Gulf demand seizes up due to the war. It seems the upper K is starting to feel it a little bit here in the bifurcated economy. 7 weeks of war in the Middle East are stifling demand in the luxury industry, with LVMH, Kering, and Hermes all reporting weak first quarter sales. Shoppers in the Middle East are some of the world's biggest spenders, splashing out at retail hubs like Dubai and other luxury destinations, including Paris and Milan. The lackluster results from three of the most important groups reveals how the impact of grounded flights and disrupted vacations is rippling through the industry. Hermes International, normally the sector's most reliable outperformer, disappointed with sales dipping 5.9% in the region. Hermes shed close to $20 billion of its value on Wednesday alone as its shares fell as much as 14%. We had beautiful growth at double-digit rates in January and February, but much of that ground to a halt in the Middle East, Hermes CEOs told reporters on Wednesday. Earlier this week, LVMH, their most important fashion and leather goods unit, reported a 2% drop in sales. Gucci sales also tumbled, with Kering's retail revenue in the Middle East falling 11% during the first quarter. So upscale fashion brands, handbags not selling as the war breaks out, or as the war continues, whatever you want to say. Shifting gears a little bit to the data center thing. That's probably why U.S. stocks don't seem to care about everything else happening in the world. Well, Maine legislature approves first U.S. moratorium on big data centers. Oh, well, that's kind of news. Maine lawmakers have passed a bill that could make it the first U.S. state to put a moratorium on new data centers, as opposition to the electricity-hungry facilities grows across the country over their impact on household energy bills and the environment. The bill, which still needs final approval from Democratic Governor Janet Mills, would freeze approvals for data centers requiring more than 20 megawatts of power until October 2027, while a state-appointed council analyzes their impact on the local grid, electricity bills, air, and water. Got 11 other states have something like this in the works. Again, this isn't law yet. The governor hasn't approved it, but that seems like it's almost a sure thing as this thing sailed through both houses in the legislature in Maine. Possibly more to come on this one. Meanwhile, we got a couple stories about durable goods and vehicles and such this morning that are all kind of interesting. Too bad, one good. Let's start with Sea-Doo maker BRP gets crushed by U.S. tariff changes and pulls their outlook. This one from just this morning. Again, the trade war, that's a very 2025 kind of headline. But yeah, that's still happening as this oil disruption happens. Canadian recreational manufacturer BRP withdrew its financial outlook for the 2027 fiscal year, saying it faces a $500 million Canadian dollar hit from recent changes by the Trump administration to its tariffs. That's about $363 million U.S. This month, the White House simplified its tariffs on items made with steel, aluminum, and copper. Certain products substantially made with those metals became subject to a 25% tax on their full value rather than a 50% tax only on the metal content. For BRP, that comes at a huge cost. The changes mainly lead to a 25% tariff on the value of snowmobiles and many off-road vehicles when they're imported to the U.S. Like many manufacturers, we are operating in a highly volatile and unpredictable tariff environment that continues to create uncertainty across the market, said CEO Dennis Laveau. BRP expects $500 million in additional tariff expenses for the remainder of the fiscal year before any mitigation measures that could partially offset these impacts. So a clarification of the tariff rule just almost wipes out BRP. Look at that stock this morning, down 26% on the simplified tariffs, trading at $58, down from $78.45. Look, year to date, this stock was up about 10%, not anymore. And over the last year, this company had a pretty good run, not anymore, knocked all the way back to where they were in August of last year. So the maker of Sea-Doos not doing so good this morning. Neither are the tractor makers. This one in successfulfarming.com or agriculture.com. Tractor and combine sales drop again despite $11 billion in farm aid. Hopes that producers would use the $11 billion paid out in farmer bridge assistance payments to buy new equipment did not appear to have materialized this year. Sales of agricultural tractors and combines in the U.S. and Canada declined again in March, according to the latest sales data from the Association of Equipment Manufacturers. In the U.S., tractor sales were down 9.1% and combine sales dropped by 25.3% compared with March of 2025. That is rough. Those tariffs really taking a bite. And the Chinese retaliation hurting U.S. farmers. This farmers' bridge assistance was supposed to help with that. Obviously, farmers didn't take that money and go buy new combines with it. These numbers reflect the overall softness in the ag economy, said Kurt Blades, Senior Vice President of Industry Sectors and Product Leadership at AEM. But he added, despite these declines in sales in 2026, the commitment to modernizing equipment and adopting innovative technologies remains strong, blah, 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 talking point. Yeah, farmers are not buying new tractors here, guys. Down big year over year. One stock that doesn't seem to care is John Deere. Now, you'd think John Deere would care about this because they make tractors and combines. But remember, John Deere and Caterpillar, those are stocks that are also knock-on effect doing really well because of the data center build-out, because they're selling a lot of diesel generators because these data centers are wreaking havoc on the power grid. They can't get connected to the grid, so they're just building diesel generators right next to it. I don't know that John Deere is going to survive as a generator company if their combines and tractors aren't selling and are down big. But right now, over the last year, this stock is up 27%. And most of that coming since the start of this year when that story broke that their generator sales were really taking off here. So for the time being, John Deere is a data center company. All right. What stage of this bubble when John Deere is a data center company and not a agriculture equipment? All right. Let's end on something positive here. We've had a lot of negative stories about European automakers over the last couple of days. And now we've got one really big positive one. Signs of hope in the auto industry. Stellantis North American shipments surge in turnaround sign. Stellantis' global shipments jumped 12% in the first quarter, led by a surge in North American deliveries on refreshed Jeep and Ram models. North American shipments to dealers and distributors, or directly to retail and fleet customers, rose 17% to 379,000 vehicles, the company said on Wednesday. Stellantis grew in all regions, including Europe, the latest evidence of a recovery triggered by the group's strategy reset. Stellantis shares gained as much as 4.6% in early trading on Wednesday. The stock has dropped by around a quarter this year, making it the worst performer in Europe's Stoxx 600 Automobiles and Parts Index. They've already rode back on electric vehicle plans and cut prices to regain market share, and the group is offering more hybrid models to win back customers after steep declines in market share under former CEO Carlos Tavares. Huh, that's interesting. They've cut prices, they're making fewer electric vehicles, and they're making more hybrids. In other words, they're giving the market what the market wants, and the market is rewarding them for that. Isn't it funny how that works? The solution to higher prices is higher prices. Other car makers have not yet gotten the memo, even though they're all taking big charges related to the overproduction of electric vehicles. Stellantis, just a couple of weeks ago, was in the news. What was it, like a $19 billion hit that Stellantis took on their write-down of their electric vehicle assets? Well, they took that signal. They're lowering their prices. They're making more hybrids, and, well, they're moving more cars. Now, keep in mind, guys, that's deliveries to dealerships, right? That doesn't immediately translate into more people are buying cars. But if the dealers are buying more vehicles, it would suggest that the dealers expect to sell more vehicles. So Stellantis right now up 3.8% ahead of the opening bell, trading at $8.47, up 32 cents on this news. So a little bit of positivity to close out the show today. I just want to say thank you, everybody, for having your coffee with the Melonheads this morning. Don't forget that like button and that subscribe button for your new guys. Also, thank you very much to my magnanimous Melonheads on YouTube, Patreon, and Buy Me a Coffee. Links are down below, should you feel so inclined. Hi, Mom. Hi, Dad. Love you guys, everybody. Till next time, live small and dream big.